Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, Internet world. Welcome to The Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble, and once again, I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy life to join me on the broadcast. Today is Thursday, October 3rd. It is the Thursday edition of The Cross in the Desert, where I'm continuing to read and discuss with you from my book, Full Moon Over Loch Ness, The Mystery Solved. Now, last week, we finished Chapter 2, and we introduced to you, as the reader, as the listener, the reason why Jeffrey has become an atheist. And in that particular chapter, we read about Jeffrey losing his daughter in a boating accident. He was once a professing Christian, but this turned him bitterly against God. And that's when he began his crusade, writing books and debating against the existence of God. Now, this week, we're going to start reading from Chapter 3, and we're going to introduce a very important topic about death and the atheist. So let's get started reading in Chapter 3, and I'm going to have a lot to say about this chapter when we're finished. Chapter 3, From Full Moon Over Loch Ness, An Unexpected Trip. Jeffrey adjusted his mask and pulled it tightly over his face. His partner, Alan, did the same. They both stood a foot away from each other in the proper stance and crossed their swords, preparing for a fencing duel. Once a month, on a Sunday afternoon, Jeffrey would set aside 2 hours from his busy schedule to meet with Alan, his best friend, for a friendly fencing encounter. Fencing for Jeffrey was the perfect escape from the stress and the demands of his life. He loved the sport and had become pretty good at it too. Although he never competed on a professional level, Jeffrey still enjoyed the sport of crossing swords in a fierce duel with his best friend. It was just the two of them all alone in the gymnasium court without a referee to compete in the battle of the century, and the loser had to buy the winner a delicious steak dinner at the restaurant of his choice. The buzzer sounded, and Jeffrey lunged forward at Alan with his foil, but Alan quickly moved to his left, avoiding a stab to the chest. Both competitors were dressed in silver-colored plastron jersey shirts and long trousers, wearing regulation gloves and masks. The clanging sound of foils, that is, swords clashing together, emptied in the empty gym as both Jeffrey and Alan fiercely lunged toward each other. Sweat poured down Alan's face underneath the mask as he backed up, alertly blocking the continuous attempts by Jeffrey to jab him with his foil. Suddenly, Alan lost his balance and let down his guard, and immediately Jeffrey plunged his foil into the chest, scoring a big point. Bending down with his hands over his knees and breathing heavily, Alan called timeout. Jeffrey quickly lifted his mask up over his face. "I can almost smell the juicy aroma of that steak," Jeffrey said in a kidding voice, a sarcastic tone. "You're all right, old man?" Alan chuckled and took a deep breath, pulling back his mask over his face. "Don't get your taste buds ready. I'm not conceding yet." They both stood a foot away from each other once again, and they crossed swords. The buzzer sounded, and immediately Alan began vigorously charging forward, attacking Jeffrey with all of his might. The sound of clashing metal shattered the quiet gymnasium as Alan advanced forward against a retreating Jeffrey. Then, without warning, Jeffrey roared back on the offensive and with a quick twist of his wrist knocked the foil out of Alan's hand and immediately scored a point with a plunge to his chest. Alan threw off his mask in frustration and bent down with his hands on his knees. "Damn it! Hooray, hooray!" Jeffrey excitedly exclaimed. "One juicy T-bone steak coming right up." The heavy rains had finally ceased, and the sky no longer had a threatening look. Jeffrey turned his silver Toyota Corolla into the Circle Parkway at the entrance of the cemetery. It was late Sunday afternoon. He was feeling guilty for having to wait 2 days past Allison's birthday, but unfortunately, the weather had been less than cooperative. Parking the car and turning off the key, Jeffrey leaned back against the headrest and breathed a heavy sigh. Visiting Allison's gravestone on a rainy spring afternoon seemed so impersonal. She had been so full of life and adventure, and now all that was left of her were memories. Jeffrey glanced at the shiny display of white roses in his hands. He leaned forward and breathed in the sweet aroma of the flesh flowers. White roses had been Allison's favorite. Fighting back the tears, he quickly opened the car door and headed towards the muddy lawn of the cemetery. It was strangely quiet this afternoon. He appeared to be all alone amongst the hundreds of marble gravestones. A few scattered raindrops rolled down his face as he slowly walked down a gravel road that winded between two green elm trees sprouting their early spring leaves. Leaving the gravel road, Jeffrey walked toward the center of the cemetery until he came upon a gray and silver gravestone. Anxiety and despair gripped his heart. It was Allison's gravestone. Jeffrey stopped and stood perfectly still. A cool breeze blew across his face, and a tiny raindrop trickled off of his nose. He closed his eyes and could see Allison's beautiful flowing blonde hair dancing in the wind as she navigated her sailboat through the choppy waves. Jeffrey turned away from gazing at her name on the soiled gravestone. Painful memories he desperately wanted to forget shot through his mind like a horror movie. He remembered the Coast Guard had finally found her body 10 miles from the drifting sailboat. The autopsy had revealed Allison had suffered a deep bruise to her forehead. They had concluded that she had suffered an accidental blow to her head and had probably fallen overboard, drowning in the Atlantic Ocean. Clutching the roses in his trembling right hand, Jeffrey slowly walked closer to the gravestone. He remembered as a child, his parents had taken him to Sunday school. He didn't want to go that Sunday. He had been too upset over his grandmother's death. At the end of the class, he went up to his teacher and asked, "What happens to people you love when they die?" The teacher smiled and reassured him that they were with Jesus in heaven, and one day he would see her again. Jeffrey gently laid down the roses a few inches from the gravestone and silently wept. His heart was filled with despair and sadness. Today, he was paying tribute to Allison's memory, and that was all. He no longer believed what his Sunday school teacher had once told him. In Jeffrey's worldview, there was no life after death. There would be no reunion in heaven. All that remained of a person was their memories. The body would decay and be absorbed by the soil, and all one could do was remember the good times that they once shared together. Death was so final and so impersonal. Today he wanted so much to hold his beautiful daughter once again in his arms and tell her how much he loved her. The poison of bitterness and anger raged in his soul. Alice's death had changed his entire worldview. Taking an angry deep breath, Jeffrey turned and walked back toward the gravel road. He hated the depressing feelings and emotions of cemetery, so it was time to head back home now to enjoy a cool glass of sweet wine and a good book. Jeffrey relaxed back in his recliner chair, cherishing the final seconds of Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. Classic music inspired his thinking. He had written some of his best books with the enchanting sound of classical music playing softly in the background. The den in his home was his sacred space, the perfect hideaway to relax and motivate his thinking for what topic to write about next. Just last year, he had finally burned the mortgage and paid off his $135,000 two-story ranch Victorian home. Columns of cherry wood bookcases lined the walls of his study, where he would read, absorb, and research every topic that was prevalent to his atheist worldview. Jeffrey lifted up his reading glasses and rubbed his tired eyes. Tonight he embarked on his third read of his favorite book, Why I Am Not a Christian, by Bertrand Russell. A month after he had walked away from the Christian faith, he had discovered the works of Russell. Bertrand Russell was a world-famous philosopher, and Jeffrey admired the way that he framed his arguments against Christianity in his book. Russell had objected to the Christian faith because of the fear and bondage that it had put in the mind of its followers. Instead of being obsessed with guilt, Russell argued that people should instead be relying on the progress of science to help make the world a much better place. Jeffrey smiled in agreement as he closed the pages of his book. Russell was saying exactly what Jeffrey was thinking. His writing had saved his life and given him courage to stand up for the naturalistic worldview and eagerly defend it. The problem with mankind is that they were looking for a crutch to lean on, a deity to save them, when instead they should be cooperating with scientific advancements to improve the world they lived in. Jeffrey looked at the clock on the wall. It was exactly 10 o'clock. He quickly pushed a button on the remote and turned on World News Tonight. Reaching over for a quick gulp of wine, Jeffrey leaned back in his recliner chair. Local police in Inverness are baffled tonight. Another body of a woman was pulled out of Loch Ness this morning after frightened tourists on a cabin cruiser spotted the body floating near the shoreline. Jeffrey quickly sat up in his recliner, riveted to the news report. In a matter related to this story, police also discovered a research vessel drifting in the lake without its captain aboard. A local family living in Inverness reported their daughter missing, who turns out to be the person operating the research boat that was found this morning. Police are also investigating the disappearance of the young woman pilot to see if this incident is related to the serial killer and his victims. The body found this morning is now the third victim of the serial killer who is terrorizing the citizens of Inverness. Quickly turning on his laptop, Jeffrey began reading every report of the Loch Ness serial killer that could be found. Besides writing philosophical books defending the atheistic worldview, Jeffrey loved true-life crime scene stories. He had a fascination with pretending to be a detective and using his skills to solve cold case crimes that had remained unsolved for many years. He clicked on several links about Inverness, Scotland, searching for bed and breakfast accommodations in and around the city. Checking his schedule, he discovered that he had a month of free time before any more debates or interviews about his new book. Logging off his computer, Jeffrey once again leaned back in his chair, excited for his new adventure. He was determined to meet the family and write his next book about the evil serial killer on the loose at Loch Ness. The famous monster of Scotland had always fascinated him, and now was the perfect time to begin his new project. Geoffrey finished his glass of wine and chuckled out loud to himself. He held the wine glass up for a toast toward the picture of his book hanging on the wall in front of him. Here's to an unexpected and fascinating trip to Scotland and the subject of my new adventure. Cheers. That ends chapter 3 of my book, Full Moon Over Loch Ness, The Mystery Solved. A lot of issues here, and I'm going to give you a little bit of a hint about something just because I enjoy the fact that you're listening to the broadcast and reading the book. The fencing challenge in chapter 3 seems a little out of place, maybe, for the subject matter of Geoffrey going to the graveside, but it's intentionally put there for a very good reason. And I want you to think about that and not forget Geoffrey as a fencing champion. But I want to also talk about this whole concept of how atheism deals with the subject of death. To the atheist, death is it. When you're dead like a dog. You came from nothing. You're here for a short time to try to make the world a better place. So you came from nothing, you're here for that reason, and you're going to nothing. You came from nothing, and you're going to nothing. Now that seems hopeless and cruel, and it is. For us who are believers, you ask yourself the simple question, how can any atheist deal with the subject of death? I want to talk to you this morning about Geoffrey and his daughter, and I want to make some discussion points with you. But I want you to hear some of the statements from a world-famous atheist and how he dealt with the subject of death, what he had to say about the subject of death. And that person is the physicist, world-renowned, very important physicist, Stephen Hawking. He had an incurable neurodegenerative condition that was diagnosed at the age of 21. Now, he contributed so many important writings. He was a brilliant man. A Brief Glimpse of Eternity, I think, was one of the books he wrote. And I want to talk to you about what Stephen Hawking had to say shortly before his death, just a couple of years ago. I want you to hear how an atheist, a world-renowned atheist like Stephen Hawking, which is similar to my character, Dr. Geoffrey Hughes, I want you to hear what he had to say. Stephen Hawking said, "I have lived with the prospect of an early death for the last 49 years. I'm not afraid of death, but I'm in no hurry to die. I have so much I want to do first." So the atheist isn't afraid of death. They feel they have a purpose here and that they have so much to do. What was his view about the brain and the physical body? Stephen Hawking had this to say, "I regard the brain as a computer which will stop working when its components fail. There is no heaven or afterlife for broken down computers. This is a fairy story for people afraid of the dark." Wow. Now, I told you he wrote a book called A Brief History of Time, and he wrote as a physicist, and he wrote about how the universe works, and he wrote another book called The Grand Design. It was co-authored with another gentleman, and he said, "Spontaneous creation is the reason there is something rather than nothing. Why the universe exists, why we exist. It is not necessary to invoke God to light the blue touch paper and set the universe going." So according to Stephen Hawking, the universe doesn't have a cause. It's always existed. It's spontaneous creation, according to him. No need to invoke God. It's always been here in some way or another. And he goes on to say, God is the name people give to the reason we are here. He says, but I think that reason is the law of physics rather than someone with whom one can have a personal relationship, an impersonal God. Before we understand science, it's natural to believe that God created the universe. But now science offers a more convincing explanation. What I meant by we would know the mind of God is we would know everything that God would know if there were a God, which there isn't. I'm an atheist. And so these are the statements of atheists trying to deal with the subject of death, the existence of the universe. As we read this morning, Jeffrey is going to his graveside of his daughter. This is probably the most deeply difficult thing for him as an atheist to face. One time he believed in God and Jesus and an afterlife. His Sunday school teacher told him, look, when your loved one dies, you're going to meet them again in heaven. But now Jeffrey no longer believes that fairy tale. That's what it is to him. Just like Stephen Hawking said, it's a fairy tale for people who are afraid of the dark. And so Jeffrey, now this staunch debater, this important world-renowned author, and of course a good champion fencer. No problem. I have great memories of Allison. I think about her in her sailboat. I can see her blonde hair flowing in the wind and her enjoying the freedom of sailing. So he has these memories, but that's all there is. He will never see Allison again. She will never see him. Life ends at the grave. There is no life after death. So for the atheist, like Stephen Hawking, enjoy what you have now. We came from nothing, and we're destined to return to nothing. The universe is all there is and all there ever will be. Matter is all that exists. There is no spirit. There is no eternity. There is no life after death. How sad. How impersonal. If you read carefully chapter 3, Jeffrey is fighting back the tears. And in a subtle way, I didn't come out and say it, but in a subtle way, Jeffrey is fighting against the Christian worldview. For a brief moment, he's saying, oh, I wish there was a God, because if there was a God, I would see Allison again. But he has to fight against that. It's a battle going on in his soul. For just an instant in that chapter, those tears, he's fighting back. I say that he's fighting back tears, but if you will, he's fighting back against believing even for a second the possibility of a God that exists. Because if God does exist, he will see Allison again. But you see, as much as he loved his daughter, as much as he wants to see her again, as much as he misses her, he cannot for a second even entertain the possibility of a God. So in this chapter, you are seeing Jeffrey Hughes at his weakest moment, when he is facing his daughter's grave and he is thinking about her and all he meant, all she meant to him. And he is saying, if there was a God, but he can't entertain that thought. But you know what's going through his mind. I didn't say it. I didn't come out and say it, but I figured you as the reader would kind of come to the conclusion that he cannot even for a few seconds at his daughter's graveside consider God exists. If he does, he can no longer be an atheist. He can no longer write these books. But then he would have a reunion for his daughter. This is a battle. This is Jeffrey at his weakest moment. And I want to say something to you about this. God is going to use the death of his daughter in a very special way. Sometimes we as Christians have a real battle with death and suffering and evil. But in this book, Full Moon Over Loch Ness, There's a purpose in the fact that Jeffrey's daughter died. And you're going to see that purpose later on in the book. I'm just giving you a few little hints. I don't know exactly who I'm talking with this morning. You might be a believer. You might be a Christian. And so this issue of life after death is a settled issue. You don't have a problem with it. And you're looking over my shoulder as I'm talking, thinking, how can this character, Dr. Jeffrey Hughes, how can he possibly live with no hope after the grave? No hope of ever seeing his daughter again that he loves so much. How can you, if you're an atheist, live with the issue of no life after death? Christianity teaches there is a loving God who came in the person of Christ to break down the barrier of sin, to heal the wound between us and God, to give peace between God and man. He came to lay down his life to pay the penalty for sin, to reunite us with God the Father. Jesus came that we might have life and hope and healing. It is not a fairy tale. The Christian faith is built on solid evidence, on manuscript evidence, on fulfilled prophecy, on history and archaeology. The Christian faith can be validated. It is not a myth. It is not a fairy tale. But as an atheist, you have to say there is no God, because in your life at some point, something traumatic has happened to shut the door of any possibility of a God. And you now can live your life in any way you choose with no moral accountability. So the atheist, this is their argument. They can live any way they please. There's no God to be accountable to, just themselves. It's the good life for the atheist. But Jesus came to reveal who God is. Jesus came to heal the sin-sick problem. Jesus came to die and rise again, to give us eternal life as a gift. This is the gospel. This is the good news. And I want you to know, whoever I'm talking to, Jesus comes to give you life and meaning and purpose. He has conquered death, hell, and the grave. Now, next Thursday, I will have a special interview with a good friend of mine, so there will be no book reading. But the week after that, we are going to delve into Chapter 4 as Jeffrey, Dr. Hughes, that is, embarks on the trip of his life to Inverness, Scotland, to write the story of the serial killer. And this is the place where his life will forever change. You don't want to miss that. In fact, I can tell you the date I'll return on Thursday to read to you is Thursday, October 17th. Mark your calendar. Don't miss out on that chapter. You can get my book at Amazon.com, Randy L. Noble, N-O-B-L-E, Full Moon Over Loch Ness is the title of the book. God bless you. Thank you so much for meeting with me today on the cross in the desert. Thank you.